Episode 137, BulaNetwork.com. Hey kids, welcome back inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell. I am your host here at BulaNetwork.com. Different intro because, well, the subject is minimalism, so I figured, hey, why not have a minimalist intro to episode 137? As I hit the record button, I don't yet have a title. I can tell you I have a working title. I may change it. So if this is different than what you see when I release it, then, well, you'll just have to deal with it. How believing that less is more will help me reinvent my business life. I don't know. I don't know if I like that title or not. Let me tell you how this all started. Think about the word minimalism or minimalist. I was only familiar with that term as it related to art and design. But back in 2007, I began to hear that term used to describe a lifestyle. And I don't know what you think of when you think of that term. I immediately thought, well, this is bound to be some vow of poverty. It's not, by the way. And I somehow stumbled upon, I don't remember how, but I remember reading about Leo Babauta. Leo is a man who lives in Guam. He has six kids. In fact, I remember his sixth child being born as I was reading his website, his blog called Zen Habits. You can find that at zenhabits.net. Well, I began to read it and it led me to finding other people in that space over a period of, I don't know how many years. I began to just check in on these people and I began to be intrigued. And Joshua Becker, who writes over at Becoming Minimalist, and then there's a couple of other fellows who run a blog called The Minimalist, and there are others. But these were the ones that between then and now kind of got on my radar, and periodically, occasionally, I would visit their blogs. I would read with great fascination their quest to simplify their lives. And I very quickly learned by reading Leo's blogs and habits that it really wasn't a vow of poverty, but it was in stark contrast to people who want to chase more and more and more and more and more and more. I was intrigued. I was very intrigued. In fact, part of the intrigue, I can freely confess to you, was the fact that here I was back in 2007, how old would I have been? I'm bad with math. I would have been probably just under 50, thereabouts, 49 or 50. So I was a very different point in life. I mean, here Leo was bringing in his sixth child into his home, and I was an empty nester. My wife and I found ourselves kind of back in that same mode that we were in when we were first married, before we had kids, where it was just us. And older couples find themselves in that situation. You get married and you're a couple and you establish your home, and then children come and it changes everything. And then another child comes and it changes everything yet again. And over time, if you're blessed, and we are, our children grew up, established homes of their own. And now everything kind of came full circle. Now here we were a couple again. Now I need to take a detour here about this whole minimalist thing, because one of the things that intrigued me about it, well, there were a number of things, none of the least of which is that the people involved in this movement, at least those that I was reading at the time, and even still, just were not caught up in amassing material things. And that held some intrigue for me. I am a person, you should know if you don't already, I am a person who is a person of faith. I'm a Christian, and I do happen to have this opposing view that I believe is born out of Scripture of not being materialistic, not being, I guess what we would say, worldly. But I am a capitalist, and no, I don't think that there's anything inherently wrong with driving nice automobiles or living in nice large homes or any of that sort of stuff. Everything in proper order and perspective, mind you. But I found that these were people who were really trying to simplify their life in a pretty magnificent way. Now, my oldest child, my son, was born in the summer of 1980, and so this summer he will turn 32 years old. And he is a young man of this generation. These are people in their late 20s, 30s that I was reading, and so I could relate. I couldn't relate because I was one of them. I could relate because I was a father of one of them. Not that my son is a minimalist, but really is not terribly motivated by attaining material things, is very frugal. Well, I'll go you one better. He's tight. He's cheap. But he's always been interested in the experience. Always. And I understood that from the time that he was young. Now, I don't know if this is a generational thing or not. It seems to me that there's some element there. And I'm supposing that every generation has some qualities that are common to that generation. Yes, I'm painting with a broad brush, as I am wont to do. But I do think that we, each of our generations, we come out and we are kind of geared a certain way. My guess is, in all likelihood, because, well, that it's that society that we emerge from, and it impacts us. It influences us, for right or wrong. Now, my particular generation, the baby boom generation, in fact, I'm at the tail end of the baby boom generation. We were sandwiched, really, between that World War II generation that Tom Brokaw calls the greatest generation, who believed in responsibility, who believed in individual accountability, who believed in hard work. But then there was that group sort of right ahead of me, that group that was probably, I'm ballparking five to 10 years older than me. And that generation was fueled by greed and accumulation of material wealth. Yes, I'm generalizing, and I know that. So my generation is between those two things. And as a result, I believe my adult life and many like me has been characterized by those two pressing, driving motivators. Working hard, getting ahead, whatever that may mean. And so maybe that can help you better understand why I am so fascinated with this whole notion of minimalism. Well, in 2009, Leo Babauta published a book called The Power of Less. Now, because I had been reading his blog at this point for at least a year and a half to a couple of years, I was very quick to go buy that book, and I read it. Now, unfortunately, I didn't read it at the time with business in mind, even though the book is subtitled The Fine Art of Limiting Yourself to the Essential in Business and in Life. Well, I was really looking at it from a life perspective, not a business perspective. So when I first read it, I sort of had blinders on, and I just read it thinking primarily of the lifestyle. Now, I didn't read it as though it was going to be some guidebook and I was going to follow it step by step, and I too was going to become a minimalist. I was just attracted. I was attracted to it because my generation then, the 50-somethings, guess what? we were doing something similar and we were having similar motivations. Now, we didn't call it the same thing. We called it simplifying our lives, and many people in my age bracket called it downsizing. Mostly, it seemed to take the form of people who had worked very hard to buy that big house in the suburbs because, well, when they were in their 30s and 40s, their families were growing. They needed more space. They wanted to have all the play toys. They wanted to have the new nice car, the new nice minivan. And now, after years of hard work, and the kids are grown, and they've established homes of their own, and now many of these aging Americans, not elderly, mind you, but just aging, maturing, found that here we are, now we're back as a couple, just like my wife and I, and we've really got too much house. Now, I don't know what your living conditions are, but I can tell you from experience that houses are a little bit like time and work. You likely have heard that adage that work will expand in order to fill the time. It does. Well, houses are the same thing. I don't care if there's just two of you in a house, and I don't care how many spare bedrooms you've got, you will put stuff in those bedrooms. I don't care how many garages you've got, and I don't care how many cars you've got, you will have stuff in the garages, sometimes to the exclusion of cars. I mean, how else can you explain the self-storage industry? I mean, come on. I don't know about where you live, but here in North Central Texas, you can hardly go, you can't go half a dozen blocks without seeing at least one. And we're talking about just rows and rows and rows and rows of these things. So clearly, Americans have way too much stuff. We can't even put it in our houses, and our houses are big. I was reading the other day about how McMansions really took a hit starting in about 2007, 2008 when the economy went south. And in some places, they are seeing the reemergence of the McMansion. That is big square footage. Big square footage. During this economic downturn, American homes typically have downsized. People have decided, you know, we don't need that much space. Well, now in some places, some people are deciding, you know what, we do. We want that much space. So that's my perspective, and that's where I was coming from even back in 2007 in looking at this whole thing called minimalism. Minimalism as a lifestyle. So now, some weeks ago, I began to think about picking up Leo's book again, but this time I had a different idea. This time I was going to read it with my business in view. How could I use the power of less to spawn, grow, and sustain a business idea? And the question really was, wasn't it time to declutter my working world? Well, truth be told, I knew it was way long past time. And so I picked up the book and I began to read it. Only this time I usually will work through a book and try to work through a book rather quickly. But now let me preface this by telling you that there are kind of six principles that Leo focuses on throughout the book. And here they are in order. 1, set limitations. 2, choose the essential. 3, simplify. 4, focus. 5, create habits. 6, start small. Well, for episode 137, that is this episode, let's just dip our toe into the very first one. Set limitations. I now began to read this book and I thought, you know, I'm not going to just whip through this. I'm going to read a little bit at a time. And I'm going to soak it in. I'm not going to scan. I'm not going to speed read. I'm going to read a page or two or whatever, and I'm going to think a while. And I'm going to make some notes. And I might engage in some conversation with some other people. And I'm just going to see where it all takes me. Now, here's the problem or the challenge. I know that this is not clean, easy stuff. But here's what I also know. I also know that it's very, very candid and honest. Because I've only got one strategy. Just one strategy is all I've got, and that's just to figure out some things. Well, maybe to just figure out one thing, and maybe that one thing I'm trying to figure out is just me. Now, that may seem odd to you, but ask any middle-aged person if they've got it figured out, and if they're honest, they'll tell you straight up that all they have figured out is that they still have a whole lot left to figure out. The difference between the older, more mature person and the younger person is, as older people, we're kind of like that line Clint Eastwood used, a man's got to know his limitations. Well, when you get older, you know. You just realize. You realize your limitations. You realize, you know, there are things I don't know. Because we once thought we did, right? We once thought that, oh, yeah, we got that down. We know that. And life just has a way of showing you just how stupid and how ignorant you really are. It just does. And so today with this episode, I want to begin a renewed quest here. And my hope is, my honest hope is that you can learn something along the way with me. This is sort of a rebirth for things around here. Now, I'd love to tell you straight up that everything that I do is well thought out, well planned, well executed. It's strategic. It's not. It's just not. I don't know about you, but I don't trust people who tell me that they're that strategic. I listen to interviews and I read things and I hear people, it seems like just pretty regularly, comment about how everything they do is strategic. I always act with purpose. I always have a strategy in place. And I've never trusted those people. I still don't. In fact, the older I live, the less I trust those people because I know that they're lying. I know it's not true. I rather suspect that the reason that they say that is to try to make you feel like you're an idiot and you're not putting in as much work as they are because they're being very strategic about everything and you're not. And you're sitting there scratching your head going, you know, how can they plan this to be that, to be this other? Well, newsflash, they didn't. They didn't plan it. You know, I've had a lot of people throughout my life tell me how they think one of my natural aptitudes is, as they put it, strategic thinking. And I'm not bragging because, well, there's nothing to brag about, but I think they're right because I'm naturally wired this way. I'm wired with some strategic thinking in place. I'm bent that way. But I'm going to freely tell you about this. Man, I am not being strategic about any of this. I mean, for one thing, I can tell you, I just know that I don't have that much control and I don't have that much power in the universe, much less the universe. But I don't have that much power and control in my own life. Because here's what I know to be true. Bad things happen to good people. And good things happen to bad people. And both happen quite often without any planning at all. So, if you want to try to tell me that you are fully strategic and everything that you do in life, you do with a great thoughtful purpose in mind, well, just don't expect me to follow and say, yeah, boy, I just don't buy it. I've lived too long. I know better. Today's episode, I'm going to describe a little bit like, and episodes to follow that are in this genre, a little bit like cooking without a recipe. You know, I don't watch many of these cooking shows. In fact, I hardly ever watch them, but occasionally you'll stumble across one and yeah, I'm like you. Maybe I'm captivated by, yeah, that looks pretty good. It's not like I'm any kind of a cook or I don't spend any time cooking in the kitchen. But you look at that and you see them and they've got this recipe and they've got all their ingredients measured out in these little cups and saucers and whatever. And those shows, we're captivated by them for a variety of things. None of the least of which is we want to know if we're into those shows, likely we want to know how to replicate that. We want to know how do they do that? And they show us how they do it. And I guess there's some interest there if you're into that kind of thing. And I'd love to tell you that that's what this is. Well, no, that's what this is not. Because this is a little bit like a cooking show without a recipe. This would be more akin to a show where we know we want to end up with something tasty and great. We just aren't yet sure what that's going to be. It's an experiment. It's a laboratory. I'd love to tell you that I've got all the ingredients mapped out. They're all right here in front of me, and I'm just going to tell you 1, 2, 3, 4. Here's what they are, and here's what the steps are. The fact is, I don't even know what the ingredients are. The ingredients are the ones that we're going to find along the way. The thing that leaps to my mind, here's what it's going to be like. It's going to be like those survival shows where you see somebody, you know, what is the one, the man and the woman, you know, they're married and they get dropped out in the middle of nowhere. It's going to be a little bit like that. We're just going to improvise. We're just going to adapt. Because here's what we know. The important thing is to remedy whatever situation we're in right now. So one of the first things that happens when those guys get left out in the middle of nowhere is we've got to get shelter. It's almost these two things simultaneously. We've got to find shelter. That is, we need to be in a safe place, either away from the elements or away from whatever could eat us. And we got to get some heat going. And we need water. I mean, these are basic, you know, basic components of surviving. This is a little bit like that. It's just a little bit like that. We're just going to look around. Okay, what do we need? What do we have to do to survive? And let's think about getting that done. And then let's think one more step beyond that. One more step beyond that. So let's dive in with what few minutes we've got left. And I don't want to belabor this, but Leo talks about the art of setting limits. Now, I have long maintained, and I learned this as a young business person, the power of saying no. As salespeople, we work really hard to get people to say yes. And as salespeople, if you deal with a salesperson, somebody that's got experience at sales, they are going to be very quick to tell you, because most of us are in this boat, we're pretty easy to sell to. I'm not sure why that seems to be true, but there is some truth to that. Maybe it's the fact that we're sympathetic with the process and those people that are engaging in the process. I don't know. But I know this, that as much as we try to seek a yes, quite often when we do have the resiliency to say no, and I'm talking about as a salesperson, when we have the resiliency and the fortitude to examine a situation and to know this customer, this prospect might not be the very best fit for me, I think it's probably best that they seek a different solution. That's really hard to do, especially when you're hungry and you're humping it and you're hustling and you're trying to make a go of it. We tend to want to say yes to everything. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't say yes frequently, but I have learned, man alive, there's some big value in saying no to some things. So this was not a real stretch for me to get my arms around the prospect of the art of setting limits. Now, in setting limits, we necessarily have got to understand that, well, we can't do everything. We can't chase everything. When it comes to our businesses and our business ideas, we can't chase every idea. Truth be told, most people don't chase any ideas. But what you probably find in looking at your career and looking at your business, I know I have, is that things morph and things adapt over time. What you hear today in the internet space commonly is iteration, and you hear about pivoting. You hear that, well, now they have iterated their offer, or their company has iterated to this or that or the other. Listen, it just means revisions were made, adaptations were made, some changes were made, some improvements were made. Think of it as when a piece of software comes out, if version 2.0 comes out, well, it may be superseded then by version 2.2. 2.2 is an iteration of 2.0. And the change may be better, that's the hope, but it might not be, but it is a change. And usually in our careers and in our businesses, those changes, they might just happen organically. That is, you may find yourself making one offer and it does okay, and another offer and it does okay, but that first offer does a whole lot better, and so you do more of that and you do less of the second one. And over time, the second one just kind of goes away. And it wasn't that you were all strategic about it. It wasn't that you were like, well, we're going to make these two offers and we're going to see which one wins. In my experience, most of the time, that really is not how it works out. It works out that you make an offer, it does okay. You make a second offer, it doesn't do as well. The first one begins to gain some momentum, and so naturally you get busy with the first one, and you feed the dragon. That dragon that is the first offer is doing better. It's demanding more of your time, and so naturally your time spent with the number two offer it's reduced. And so this organic thing happens, and you now find that you have limited your offers to those things that are winning more and more in the market. And you're not paying as much attention to those that are losing. You've got to know where to set your limits, what to set your limits on, and that can be really tough in business. It can be really tough. Now, here's one takeaway that may help you, because this is where my head's at as I think about the things that I've done and have been doing. I need to set some limitations. That is, I need to answer some basic fundamental questions. And some of those questions that I know I need to answer, and maybe you do too, what do I want to be? Who do I want to serve? Who do I want to be around? Who and what do I want to be? Now you'd think, come on, you're 55, you ought to have those down cold. Well, I once did, but I now don't, because things have changed. Just like our homes change, there was a time where I had a son and a daughter living at home. There was a time when I had two high school kids living at home. There was a time when I had two college kids living at home. Now I don't. My circumstances in life have changed. There was a time when I aspired to get into that particular neighborhood. There was a time where I aspired to have that certain kind of lifestyle. Well, not anymore. I'm now in a different place. And so those things that drove me as a 35-year-old father aren't the same things that are driving me as a 55-year-old grandfather. Now, that isn't to say that I've lost my ambition. No, quite the contrary. I'm as ambitious as I ever was, and I'm very accomplishment-driven. But some of the things that drove me then don't drive me now. I'm not driven by a house. I'm not driven by, no pun intended, a car. I'm not driven by toys. Guy toys. I'm driven by some things that are far, in my opinion now, far more important. Now, those things seemed very important to me as a younger guy. very important to me, you know, because we can justify these things. And I'm not saying that we're wrong, but I'll just freely tell you how I did it. You know, I wanted these things for my family. Well, I look back now and that's true, but you know what? I wanted them for myself. I wanted them for my own sense of self, my own sense of accomplishment, for whatever pride I was trying to generate in my family and from my wife. And, you know, come on, guys, we have to acknowledge that there is some of that. And depending on who we are, for some of us, that may be a bigger thing than it is for others, but it is an important component. It's different today. It's just different for me. And I don't care who you are. I don't care where you're at in life. But from year to year, as circumstances change in your life, these drivers, these triggers, these motivators, these are things that change. And they morph over time. When I started in business, and for the vast majority of my business, there was nothing known as the internet. And if you don't believe that the internet changes everything, well, you are living in a cave, because it does change everything. And so let me end by telling you a few things that I have set my limits on, in that these are some things that I know without question I want, and there are some other things that I know I don't want. And it's not a long list, so don't worry, I'm nearly done. I know that I don't want to be away from home. I know that anything that would take me away from home on any kind of a regular basis or an extended basis, I'm not interested in. I don't care how lucrative it might be. Again, we're talking about our business life, but we really can't separate the two. I have zero interest in being away from home. That's me. Now, I know guys, and they love to travel. They love nothing better than to get on a plane and go somewhere and be gone for 3 days. I'm not casting judgments. That's just not who I am. I want to be home. I want to be in my own bed. I want to be around my family. I don't want to be gone. I just don't want to be gone. If I'm gone overnight, occasionally, sure, that's fine. It's a whole lot less fine if I'm going to have to be gone more than one night. Now, that's just who I am, and I'm comfortable telling you that, and I'm comfortable setting that as a limit, that's necessarily going to limit whatever my next iteration is going to be. And, okay, I've already kind of got the cart before the horse, but, you know, let's pull back. So Bula Network, LLC, basically has been a kind of a business consultancy. It started out primarily helping commission-based, independently owned retailers. It kind of morphed into what I would really call, I never did call it this, but I would call it more executive coaching. It was more the small business owner whose quality of life was just horrible because so much of the business just hinged on him or her. And so it kind of morphed into that. And it's gone on from one thing and then to another, but it has all been offline. I jokingly call it the real world. The online world is a real world. But it has been not in this virtual world. It has been toe-to-toe, belly-to-belly kind of stuff, face-to-face kind of stuff. Now, I have delivered some content via the internet, via audio, via video, via whatever. And so the Yellow Studio did not start out as a podcasting or any kind of a video casting studio. I just realized, you know, I've got the equipment here. I'm using it for these other purposes. I'm going to start a podcast. And that's what happened. I'd love to tell you that, oh, I had this grand strategic plan. No, I didn't. Fired up the microphone and said, hey, let's record this and we'll put it out there and see what happens. Well, crickets chirped. That's what happened. And in large part, that still is what's happening. And if you know me at all, you know I care, but I don't care. I care in that, yes, I'm like you. We think if we've got something of value, we think we can help people, and we want to help people, and we want to help more people, then we need more people to give us a chance to help them. I positively am guilty as charged. But on the other hand, I obviously, here it is, episode 137, and I don't have tens of thousands of listeners. I don't have any kind of a list to speak of, and I'm still hitting record, and I don't have any plans to stop. That may, many of you may go, oh man, please stop. But I don't. But now it's time to kind of redefine some things. I'm now at a point in life where it's time to iterate. It's time to pivot. And so one of the limitations that I'm now placing is my next iteration needs to be predominantly online, predominantly internet-based. What does that mean? It means exactly what it says, that I need to find a way to provide service to people. And yes, that means free as well as services that people are willing to pay for, because even though I'm 55 and it's now just my wife and I, and I've got this long career behind me, it's not like I'm just going to sit back and do nothing. And it's not like I'm just, you know, I've got just this treasure trove of wealth and I just never have to work again. I may have, as they say, more runway, and I may have some latitude that not everybody has, but I still believe that there's something of value that I can provide. Do I know what that is? No, not right now. But I know that the limits I'm putting on this are those two. Yeah, that sound you heard was me hitting the microphone. I'm a real pro. 137, you'd think I could keep my hands off the mic boom, but sometimes I get carried away. You know, I'm animated. I flail my arms around and I hit the microphone. So, hey, that's what happens when you're a real pro. Set limitations. Now, how do you set these limitations? Do you just, you know, arbitrarily, did I just arbitrarily pull out of thin air? You know what? I want to stay home. You know what? I want to make sure that anything that I do, the next iteration is going to be online based. No, of course not. I think you have to really come to serious terms with who and what you are if you're ever going to really get to who and what you want to be. And there necessarily have to be some limits. And this is really hard. This is really, really, really hard. You know, we want to believe that we can be these Renaissance men. And while it is absolutely positively true that most people won't take action on any idea, there are some of us who have so many ideas that we're paralyzed in kind of the opposite direction. We're paralyzed not because we don't have an idea. We're paralyzed because we got too many ideas. And it's like, well, how do you know? Pick one. How do you know which one to chase? How do you know which one? And when you get to be my age and you've got one whole career behind you where you've spent decades in something that you just know like the back of your hand. I remember telling somebody before I stepped away from my previous career back in 2009. You know, I hadn't seen anything new. I hadn't seen a new problem in 10 years. Now, that sounds cocky and arrogant, and I don't mean it that way. But when you've grown up and you've done something from the time that you were 15 all through college and all through your early adulthood, and by the time, you know, you were in your mid-20s, you were running some multi-million dollar businesses, and one thing led to another, and you went from one position up a notch to a different position, and then you wake up one day and all of a sudden you're 50-ish. I don't care what industry you're in, if you've got that kind of history, you have likely seen it all. And there's a boredom that sets in. I don't care who you are. There just is a boredom that sets in because you're just not challenged. You're not as challenged because the things that you see come up, okay, you know, the first 4,000 times you saw it come up, yeah, okay, might have got your juices going. But now that you've seen it umpteen thousand times, and you kind of know how to deal with it, it just becomes a little bit blasé and boring. Now, I don't know where you're at. Your situation in life may be very different than mine, but here's what I want you to do. I want you to find some help in all of this. I want you to find some way that these things can have application in your life. And I think they can, by the way. I absolutely think they can. I think that you can take this whole notion of the power of less, and I think we can take these principles that Leo writes about, and I think that we can work on our careers and we can work on our businesses, and I think we can perhaps make some better sense of it all, because I do think it can help us come to terms with some things about who we are and maybe about who we want to be. I'd love to tell you I'm 55. I got it all figured out and I know exactly who I am and what I am. I know this. I do have a much better sense of who I am. I do have a much better sense of my limitations. I don't know that I have any better sense of who I want to be. I can tell you this. I'm a lot more comfortable in my skin, if you please, than I used to be. But boy, the motivations are very different. I'll end and tell this story as we've got about 3.5 minutes of music left. About the same time that I began to read this blog of Leo's in 2007, it was about then, actually it was a few years before that, I was about 48, I had an epiphany, and the epiphany was that I wanted to attack my health. It wasn't that my health was failing, it was that my wife and I would continually visit elderly couples, and invariably the wife would be taking care of her husband, whose health was failing. He had worked like a dog, and, you know, it's a typical story. She stuck taking care of a man who failed earlier in life, perhaps, to take care of himself. And then I would see that man pass, and then invariably I would see this elderly woman who had spent so many years caring for him. I would see it took a toll on her, and now her health would begin to fail. And she would pass. And it was in getting in the car after making one of those visits to a couple and seeing him being pushed around in a wheelchair by his wife that I got in my car and I made a silent commitment. I didn't say a word to Rhonda. She was driving. I was in the passenger seat. And I made up my mind right then and there. I looked over at her and I looked straight ahead. And I remember vividly thinking, I can't do this to her. I joined a gym, and I have been rather faithful and diligent to work out ever since. How else can you explain all the diet books? I mean, do we need all of these diet books? The answer is yes, and the reason that we need all this self-examination is because people come to these epiphanies, if you please, in life at very different stages. Who'd have thought that at 48 I'd turn into a gym rat? But it happened. Who's to think that you're going to enter a bookstore and there's going to be this book that it hits you, it resonates with you, it's something that you can embrace, when surrounding it are dozens of other books that don't resonate with you and you can't embrace? Hey, it's variety. It's the spice of life, you know. The power of less. I think it's got powerful application to our life. It does make me kind of really want to get back and reinvestigate the whole minimalist thing, but I'm not going to go that far. Yes, hey, I'm like anybody else. You know, we're going to jump all over eBay and Craigslist, and we think, you know, we need to get rid of this. What do we need this for? Let's sell this. Boy, lots of people in my age bracket are doing that. Randy Cantrell, that's my name. Bula, B-U-L-A, network.com. That's the website. Connect with me. I would love it if you would go over to iTunes and subscribe. I'd also love it if you'd leave me a review. It would be great, wonderful, and terrific. Hey, till next time, greetings from the Yellow Studio.